So hi everyone, welcome to the podcast. So super stoked to announce that we have Sheel, who is an OG in the fintech space, got married in the metaverse, and is the co-founder of Better Tomorrow Ventures. So hi Sheel. So super thrilled to announce that today's episode is brought to you by an incredible sponsor, Akshat Jain. So he's a fantastic resource for those of you who are interested in the world of venture capital and business. And Akshat is a student who talks about the venture capital sector and shares his insights and perspectives on LinkedIn. His articles are an absolute delight for anyone looking to understand the ever-evolving landscape of VC, startups, and business innovation. He covers everything from explaining basic terms to talking about the future of VC. So you can connect with Akshat on LinkedIn to stay up to date with the latest trends and insights in venture capital and business. And you can find him at Akshat Jain, just by searching up Akshat Jain on LinkedIn, and I'll also drop the link to his handles in the show notes. So take the next steps in your business journey. Invest in your future by investing your time in Akshat's insightful content. And now, without further ado, let's jump right back into the podcast episode. You're pretty famous on Twitter for like this Taco Bell thing and the metaverse. So why exactly do you love Taco Bell so much? And then following up to that, if given the opportunity, would you actually invest in Taco Bell?
So I think I love it because it's... So first of all, I'm vegetarian and it's very veggie friendly as compared to many other fast food options in America. And it's also spicy and sort of affordable, which was important when I was growing up. So I think that's why I love it. And then in terms of investing, so Taco Bell's part of a company called Yum Brands, which is a public company. It's like a $40 billion company. And I'm not an investor in it, but I should have been, because it's been a amazing returning company, actually. It's
amazing that your love for Taco Bell stems from the fact that it's a vegetarian brand. And yeah, that's quite an interesting thing. And also, I loved your perspective on whether you would invest given the opportunity. So my next question is, so what exactly makes a fintech startup venture backable? And what are your thoughts on that, given that you're an OG in the space and you've seen a lot throughout the years and you've probably met with hundreds of startups in your career? So what exactly makes a fintech startup venture backable?
Yeah, I think, the main thing we look for is the team. Is this the right team to execute on this? So when we look at a team, it's really a founder setting a vision and then being able to articulate that vision, get people behind the vision. And that includes employees, customers, investors. All those things are really important. So I think those are a big part of what we look for. Team number one. Then we look for, is there a real technology advantage to what they're building? Because technology companies scale. We also look at, I'd say, how big is the market is another thing we look at. So like total addressable market, is it big enough such that if these guys are successful, it's going to be a huge company? All those are components of what we look for.
Okay, so just to sum up for the audience, so you look at the team, the tech advantage, and the TAM. So
yes.
Those are like some pretty good points. And I think most VCs also kind of look at those similar kind of metrics as well when they're evaluating startups. So I saw somewhere that you invested in some founders without even taking a meeting from them. So what are those top tips to stand out in a pitch to you that, or any just in general, like just pitching in general, that any founder can take away from this episode today?
Yeah, I haven't invested in anyone without meeting them. So always post-meeting. But tips are, get in touch through any means possible, a connection if you have one, but otherwise cold is just fine. And then, you know, be articulate about what you're building. And if it's a fit, then it's a fit, and we'll chat.
Yeah, that is some really good advice for how somebody can, you know, get an either an intro or just in general, just reach out through any means necessary. And so my next question is actually a question from Vivek, and he poses a question. So imagine Sheel as an 18-year-old. What skills will he learn and acquire in order to build a successful long-term company? So that kind of goes back into like, how does one build a successful startup?
I think it's about trying many things. And sort of one of the most important things is just like speed of shipping. If you continue to try new things, eventually you'll have success. So I think as a young person, I would advise anybody to just put something out there in the world, learn from it, and go. You can't be afraid of failing because, you know, people, like many of us have failed many times in our life, but that's actually what's made us successful, learning from that failure.
So on the topic of failure, so what have been some of your biggest failures per se in the VC journey? Maybe you've not invested in a company that, or you passed on a company, like anything that you could share, like any of your lessons that you've learned from your failures?
Yeah, I've definitely invested in some bad companies, missed out on investing in some great companies. So there's definitely a lot there. And then, you know, I think one company I invested in, I think I just didn't do enough homework on the founders. And so since then, I've done a lot more background research on the founders to avoid any potential issues.
Yeah, I think doing your homework is really crucial as a VC, and just to understand, even as a podcaster, to understand the person beyond who they are as their career, and really doing their homework on that person that you want to interview and the person that you want to get on the podcast. So my next question to you is, so who was the first, so can we start off with like, who was the first person to take a chance on you in the VC space? And when you were building Better Tomorrow Ventures, like, who was that initial person to take a chance on you? And like, what could you say on how to manufacture and create belief capital for yourself?
Yeah, so the first person in the VC space to take a chance on me was Dave McClure. He had a fund called 500 Startups, and they'd invested in my first company. And we had a bit of a relationship. And, you know, when I mentioned I was interested in venture, he jumped at the chance and, you know, hired me. And I didn't really know what I was doing, but I learned a lot through him and through the team. And that set me on the path I'm on now.
That's really great that you had somebody to kind of take you under your wing and like really teach you the ropes of the industry before you even got into your own VC and started doing your own thing. And so my next question is more along the lines of, so I was watching your podcast with KP and I really loved the energy that you brought to that conversation. And you were talking a lot about a bit about immigrant mentality and bias for action. So could you just share a bit about that, like the immigrant mentality and like how did that help you in achieving your American dream or like trying to achieve your American dream?
I think it's like there's like hard work and scrappiness that's part of the immigrant mentality. And I think those are things that I've learned from my parents. you know, like my parents are immigrants. I am sort of second generation. But yeah, I think those are things that have been good learnings.
I definitely agree on the hard work and the scrappiness part. Like, when I started this podcast, I was like super scrappy with the setup. I didn't do anything. I didn't even have a webcam. I didn't have any microphone. And so I just started like really scrappily. And then as I evolved, I started adding in more things to my setup. And eventually it's like what it is now. So my next question following up from that is, so what are some of the immigrant-led companies that you are betting big on or that have done well historically? And what do you think, like, what made it stand out for those companies and for those founders?
Yeah, actually, if you look at, I'm just realizing now that if you look at the top three companies in my previous fund, they're all immigrant founders. So that's the 2020-2021 fund. One is from Israel, one is from Tunisia, and one is from Nigeria. It's interesting. I think they all have these same qualities, and I think there's also like a chip on their shoulder of like having come to the United States. So I think all of these things are interesting and play a part in who they are today.
So just to sum up for the audience, the chip on the shoulder and hustle and grit and having this mentality of scrappiness are all like traits that you've seen in immigrant founders. So my next question following up from that is, so what exactly is Better Tomorrow Ventures doing to support their immigrant founders in your portfolio and just to support immigrant founders in general? Like, I know that you have like quite a phenomenal immigrant story coming with your father and like you as well. And so like, could you share just like how you guys are trying to change the landscape?
Yeah, we are. I don't think it's anything explicit. I think it's just sort of like, there's nothing specific that we do for immigrant founders. It's just the same as the services we do for everyone, which is like, we do a lot to build a sense of community. We help with raising the next round. We help with recruiting. All those sorts of things are just part of what we do as a VC fund. Nothing specific just for immigrants.
So if you were to like say go out and start your own VC, a new VC focused only on immigrants, what would you do to help to support those type of founders? And like, what do you envision for that?
I think, you know, I think sort of the same things we do for the founders that I just mentioned. So our sort of like portfolio support, and community building, recruiting, all that sort of stuff.
Okay, amazing. And so what are some trends you're seeing in the VC space right now? Like, how could fintech be better, or how could VC be better in general? And given that you're like quite a seasoned VC and you're like an OG in the space, so like, what are your thoughts like on that?
Yeah, I think, there's a lot that could be improved about venture capital. The main thing is that I don't like is there's a lot of egos at play. And I think venture capital would be better off without those egos. And I wish we didn't have all of that in our world, but we do. There's a lot of insecurity, unfortunately.
Yeah, so I've observed your Twitter and you're like one of the nicest like VCs out there, comparatively speaking to some of the other VCs. So like, what do you think, like, how do you, what makes you like this like nice person in VC? Like, is it like your upbringing, or like, how did you exactly become like such a standout person like on Twitter VC?
First of all, really appreciate you saying that. It's very kind. I think there's a lot of really great people out there on VC Twitter. I would say, you know, most of the people I consider my friends in this industry are similarly nice and kind. But if I had to say for myself, like, yeah, I think my parents, all credit to my parents for, you know, raising me the way I am.
Yeah, that's really great that your parents had such an impact on your life. And so one question when I was interviewing Kamal Ravikant, I actually asked him was, how did your mother impact your life? And so I would like to pose the same question to you, but I'd like to rephrase it to, like, how would your parents, like, how have they impacted your life? And in what ways have they impacted your life?
Yeah, my parents have had a big impact on my life. I think they've, my dad is like more laid back and chill. My mom is like, go, go, go. And a negotiator for everything. And so I think I'm like a combination of both, which is nice. Both are super smart. I think I've just learned a lot from them.
I think it's really interesting, like, how your answer is obviously very different from Kamal's, because he had such a different upbringing and very different circumstances. But I think it's interesting to hear, like, your perspective as well of how your parents have, like, shaped your life and, like, what different things both your parents brought to the table. So my next question is more like what the work you're doing at Better Tomorrow Ventures and Mint Accelerator. So there's like a couple of accelerators that are merging out there, like, you know, YC is the more traditional one and like many other players, like HFO emerging. So what exactly differentiates Mint Accelerator from, say, the other accelerators, apart from the fact that maybe it has a fintech focus? Like, what are the other differentiating qualities amongst these accelerators?
Yeah, so YC is, you know, obviously super successful, built for scale, hundreds of companies a year. Ours is very specialized into the world of fintech. And, you know, this first cohort, we have 7 companies and they work out of our office. So we believe that there's a lot to be gained by interactions in person. So ours is fully in person. All of our companies are here in the office. And then we do a lot more sort of like hands-on training that kind of we wish we had when we were founders.
I think you made a really great point on the hands-on training part. I think that that's a really good way to like get some mentorship as well, like help from experienced veterans and also put things into the practical perspective. So You mentioned that you were like a former founder, and I believe you may have had like an exit in your portfolio, or you're also an exited founder. So correct me if I'm wrong on either of those things. But yeah, what have been some of your like biggest learnings and mistakes as a former founder turned VC?
Yeah, I think, man, there's so many mistakes. But I think, you know, sort of one mistake in the venture space is thinking that something won't succeed just because something similar to it in the past didn't succeed. And I've definitely made that mistake before. If you look at some of the consumer fintech companies that have been successful, there are many other companies before it that weren't. So, for example, Robinhood was not the first free trading app. Chime was not the first neobank, but they executed in a way that was very different. And I thought, okay, other people have failed in this space, so these guys will fail too.
So just expanding on that, so what made you think that Robinhood had failed? And like, if you would invest in them, would you invest in them today? Like,
given the opportunity, now seeing that like Robinhood has gotten whatever success and like these neobanks have achieved whatever success they've achieved, would you invest in them today? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so, you know, at the time, there had been some other like low-cost trading apps. But I didn't realize that Robinhood was reaching an entirely new audience. And they reached that audience by being mobile first and having a very user-friendly app. And, you know, they executed super well. And so, you know, I missed out on that one. I think there are other, you know, there are other companies that came after it that haven't been successful. But I think it was really kudos to them on execution.
So in your opinion, like, what would be like a good execution for a startup? Like, just like, yeah, like, how could a startup execute well? Like, following in the footsteps of Robinhood or, like, some of these other companies, like, how could they execute better?
I mean, I think it's a lot of, like, listening to customers and developing the product based on what customers want.
That's so true. Customers are really key to any business, any startup, and any podcast also, or like anything that you're doing. You need to have like good customers in the pipeline, and you always have to be like interacting with them and like learning from your customers. So my last question to you is, so you were involved with the pitch. I think you were like a producer or like a founder of the pitch show, which got acquired by Gimlet. So you've seen the pitch go from podcast concept to acquisition. So what are some of those kind of big mistakes or learnings? And how exactly did you get involved in the pitch?
Yeah, so the pitch started because I was actually watching Shark Tank sick at home. And I was at this time an angel investor. And I thought, hey, I could do this better. Like, let's have a real show where people, real companies are pitching us. And so that's how it started, and it grew quite a bit. And then ultimately in 2017 got acquired by Gimlet, which then later got acquired by Spotify. So it was quite a journey for us. And it was a fun one. A couple of things that were influential for us. One, when we launched, we had a very successful launch on Product Hunt. It really put us on the map and got our first like 10,000 subscribers. And then from there, I think things were kind of chugging along. And then we got featured in the Apple Podcast app, which was amazing. And they featured us like right at the top of the app. And so we, I think that was crazy for us. We just grew and skyrocketed to the top of the charts, which was really cool.
Well, it was I think you made some good points. I think Product Hunt is definitely an untapped potential even for startups, not just for podcast hosts as well, to get that initial sense of like traffic and stuff. And yeah, I think getting featured also, just to sum up for the audience, Product Hunt and a successful Product Hunt launch and a feature in Apple Podcast can really help to accelerate the growth of a podcast. And so my next thing was, so I just wanted to understand from you, like, how can the audience reach you? And like, how can they pitch potentially to Better Tomorrow Ventures?
Yeah, I would say, you know, cold emails do work, cold DMs, you know, make sure you're a right fit for us. But yeah, all those things work. If you can get an intro, that's great. But if not, totally fine to go cold.
Oh, and so on the point on cold emailing, so what are your top tips for people who cold email to you? Like, just to close it off, like, what could you share?
You know, it's important to be to the point and make sure that we're the right fit for you. 90%+ of the cold emails I get are not a fit for me because they haven't done their homework. They haven't read our website. They don't know what we like. But those things are really important, obviously.
Amazing. It was an absolute honor and a pleasure to host you on the podcast today. And thanks for being a champ and coming at this like pretty early for you in the morning. So if you're listening to this podcast right now, I have an open opportunity to reach this audience. So if you want to reach college students and freshers interested in startups and venture capital, and just in terms of the demographics, the age of 18 to 22 is the highest age demographic, and India and US are the two largest country demographics of listeners for this podcast. Email me at bizpodruhi@gmail.com. So thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode, and hope you've learned something new.